To be the best, you need to play with the best. You might not have your own personal high-level circle of women yet, but you can hang with us on the Female Millionaire Show. I'm Midori Verity, serial entrepreneur for over 25 years, and I interview badass female founders and cut through to what you really need to know. So in 20 minutes, you have what can take years to learn. If you're wanting to play bigger, come play with us. Join the Female Entrepreneur Revolution today. Cheers. We are here with this woman who just, I talked to her the other day and we were supposed to do a whole recording and instead we talked for almost an hour and a half. She is filled with information and she is just a wealth of knowledge when it comes to finance and growing your business and getting scrappy. And we are going to be diving into all kinds of subjects today, but you definitely want to have a pen and paper ready for taking notes. We are here with Wen Jing He. She is the founder and president of Wen Capital Advisory Group. And then apparently she also has a real estate company and God knows what else. She has all kinds of things going on. But welcome, Wen Jing, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
We had so much fun talking the other day and I'm like, you know what, we need to just schedule a different day because there's so much to cover. But where I want to start is you were telling me that you were raised in a you were raised with all males.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Shanghai, China. In that time, I as only child, you know, because the one child policy in China, everybody's the only child, right? No siblings. I could have had a sister, right? But hey, you know, that's just the way it is. And it just happened to be that I was raised in a neighborhood. I was raised by my dad. My mom left me when I was five, you know, for the States. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't see her again until I was 17.
Wow.
So basically I was kind of like, you know, raised by a single dad. And so, and then obviously, you know, as I told you, right? So it was, my dad was a huge sports fan. So he would just leave the TV on, like playing sports, like, you know, a lot. And then we never lock our door because that's kind of our environment back in the day, right? We're like living in those niche neighborhood, like hutong. I'm not sure if you ever heard of that kind of term. Hutong is, another way called brick house. Whatever you want to say, it's just those old style house that came all the way from like back in the days, like Qing Dynasty was like, so, and then like they kind of converted into, I don't know, they somehow, none of those would be even considered legal in those houses, you know, and according to the housing regulations here, like sure. All of them were just cut in just like a little, like everybody's living like very little space. Everybody like 12 units of people share the same kitchen or something like that. Pretty crazy. So the living environment was pretty crazy. So everybody's always everyone just like going to different places and just having
it makes me think of like a college dorm room.
Something, dorm, yeah, it's just everyone just squeezed up, like, you know, five, six people living in that little, you know, 100 square footage place or something like that. It was just, and then, so at the time, obviously, my mom was not there. So me raised by my dad. And then, so we just usually leave the door open. So folks would come in, my dad's buddy come in, watch sports. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, hey, let's watch sports. That's kind of how it goes. And then all their kids growing up, and then, you know, it just happened to be all.
And you mentioned how sports was big for you. But when we first started talking, you're like, yeah, I was playing, you were talking about basketball and how you played basketball a lot and how you're getting ready to go to a boxing class.
Right.
But you said growing up, you were out playing, you know, all the kids in the neighborhood, or at least in your neighborhood, tended to be boys. And so you were playing with them.
I just happened to be the only girl. So play video games, play Lego growing up, play chess game, play a lot of video games. Because it's just, until like, that's kind of part of the reason why I became nearsighted. Like I was just playing video games nonstop without even eating. And just
that's what you
all
did.
The way, just until I just beat the game. I would just play from 6 a.m. all the way to like midnight. And maybe I ate like once. And that was just how addictive I was, you know, playing video games with all the kids in the neighborhood. And my cousin, all my cousins are boys too, which is very weird.
So what fascinates me is I want to know how you feel like that upbringing, being around all these boys playing, you know, you said, you're like, I didn't even have a Barbie. I didn't even know what a Barbie was.
Yeah, it's just, right? It was not relatable to me, right?
Yeah. And so like, how did it, How do you feel like that has translated into the businesswoman that you've become?
It was basically, for me, it was very interesting because when I came over here, it was a whole different environment, right? So with a lot of, I just feel like I grew up with the boys. Nobody ever told me what I cannot do as a woman. That was the thing. My dad never told me that. None of my guy friends told me that. I never got any kind of comment from the boys like, oh, you're a woman. Like, you should do that. You should do that. Just, I never got this comment. I feel like I always kind of wanted the boys. Like, whatever they can do, I can do. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty competitive. So I would just try to beat them in chess games. We play a lot of chess games, different kind of chess games. The Western version, the Chinese version. There are a lot of Chinese version chess games as well. So it's just kind of, and we would play those kind of like quick number game where like, you know, who can come up with like the fastest, like the 24. So we put like a four pokers in front of us. It's like, okay, who can come up with the 24 in the fastest amount of time? And just pat on the table. And then I was not very good. And then I got better and better and better. And I became the fastest one among all the boys. Like I always just, you know, and then I feel very good about that. So it was just really, you know, the competitiveness, just like, oh, you know, I want to beat you. You know, like I want to be better than you. You know, it's just, and I never thought about gender as any kind of a hurdle. I just thought I was just one of them, you know? Right. And then one part is that, you know, talk about entrepreneur and things like that. You know, it was really interesting because I always did those little hustling stuff. Like back in the day, even when we play Monopoly, so I play a lot of Monopoly. That was probably one of the reasons why I started kind of doing this stuff in the Monopoly that I, you know, in real life now. So we play a lot of Monopoly with the boys. And, you know, again, we're very competitive. Like, oh, we get those houses, get those hotels, and all that kind of stuff. And then somehow, and then I was like, wait a minute, this Monopoly is a little bit limited because it's just like one board. It's kind of boring. So I started making my own Monopoly game. So in the summer, so me and my cousin, who's like very good at painting. So we're like, so I recruited my cousin. I even recruited my dad. I recruited a friend of mine. We're like, let's make a board game. Just our own Monopoly, our own version, very different from that boring Monopoly game. So we made a whole like huge like board. Like we just made it like we paint each, you know, like, you know, in the old Monopoly game, it's a street, right? So like this street. I was like, yeah, that's boring. Let's make it into like White House, Mount Everest, you know, and you can buy those too, you know, Machu Picchu, you know, it's all the monuments. Let's just make that into those, you know, Tiananmen Square, you know, like Forbidden City, you know, all that. So we just like put those in, right? And we paint them out too. And we even make a different one. So instead of the prison, you know, in the Monopoly game, we're like,
in jail.
Prison.
Yeah.
So, all right, you're in prison. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to make another world. So instead of paying to prison, we put it into like heaven, hell. So like, hell, okay, oops, you're in a hell right now. Now you're in a different world. So we're making a whole new board game just for the hell. So you have to like, you know, throw the dice and just go until you can kind of get out. So it was really fun. It was just, we spent a whole summer just like painting. We designed our own cash too, because we found like the old Monopoly game cash was a little kind of plain. So we just drew out of those cash. One by one, like those kind of
stuff,
like $1 bill, $5 bill, $20 bill. We just drew them out. I wake up 6 a.m. So me and my cousin, and we're just like just drawing, hand draw those bills, $1, $20, $100 bill, and then we made it like that big stack, hand drew all of them, and then the kids in our neighborhood love my game, so they were just coming. They're like, can we play your game? Can we play your game?
It seems like you should be reaching out to Hasbro and doing some kind of partnership with them with your game, because it sounds like, I love it. I love how you had like spinoffs. It's almost like a TV show,
I know,
right?
Like a reality TV show. It's a lot of spinoffs. Like I wish I was like more business driven at the time. I would like, you know, apply for my licensing or all that kind of stuff. Now I think about that. Like I'm trying to, you know, like now I don't know where my board games are, but man, like there was at the time was no pictures, no camera and all that stuff. Otherwise I would have taken like tons of pictures, camera. I made tons of pictures and videos and like demonstrating the game. But at the time we just want to have fun.
Yeah.
Just like just the devotion we had. I didn't even know we had that, which was so much fun. That was our summer activities, you know? Just,
Yeah, I love it. I love how your brain was thinking.
yeah, that was
Okay,
so that
so
was kind of those one of those entrepreneurial stuff, right? It was like try to become
yeah.
creative and doing something different.
And the creativity is a huge part. Didn't Einstein say that the thing that we should be concentrating on the most is our creativity,
Yeah,
right?
something about just that time in a kid's. Well, at the time, obviously, when you're a kid, you just want to have fun. So you don't
Right.
really think about like, oh, make, you know, creative and being creative or making money and all that kind of stuff. I used to just read a lot and I want to play, just play the
Yeah.
game, stuff like that, you know. So I also read a lot because that was kind of maybe the benefit, you know, living with no computer and all that kind of stuff because we just, that's the environment, you know,
Yeah, you had to, I mean,
no
that's the.
electronic device. Those are the only things you could do, and reading. I just read tons of books, different kind of books.
When I grew up, Pong came out, Atari. Pong came out. It's like, and now you look at it, it's such a simple game. But like when it came out, my girlfriend had it, and I would always want to go spend the night so we could
Oh
play.
yeah,
Such a big
yeah,
deal.
those are.
Yeah.
And then obviously, when the video game came out, I just got so drawn to it, and then I just
Yeah.
completely like, you know, I'm not like damaged my eye vision and things like that,
See,
and I
so
was.
okay, so I want to come back to, you're in finance. You're in a world that's dominated by men. You know,
Right.
there are women in it, obviously, but it truly is dominated by men. So how do you feel, you being a female, but being raised the way that you were, how does that, I mean, do you feel like that's a how is that affecting your success being in the financial world?
Yes, that was a good question. So, you know, it's basically there are kind of two folds, I guess. Well, first of all, well, growing up, but like I don't really like internally, I didn't have that kind of hurdle of being a woman. So I felt like I can just go ahead and do it, right? Do whatever I can do. Now, obviously, when somebody, you know, they just start, you know, making comment like about you, women, and even like, you know, when you're like, you know, you're about your ethnicity, you know, and things like that. So me personally, I used to growing up, I grew up in a kind of rough environment, like went to like a school where like I see fights every other day to the point where the teacher even got numb seeing the fights. So a teacher saw the fights and like, all right, another fight, just another fight. I was fine. So I feel like, you know, so recently I'm reading like Elon Musk books and then he was talking about how he was like beaten up and all that stuff. I'm like, well, that kind of a little bit like my childhood, like kids just got beaten up here and there. He's almost just like out on the street. You know, just like really not much regulation. Kids just play and they can demean you. They can, you know, really laugh at you. They can just really, you know, you got into fight a lot. You get into either verbal arguments or either physical altercations. It was really common for us. So growing
Yeah.
up, it just without much, like my parents don't care. You know, my mom is not even here, right? So my dad, he's like Mr. Nice person. He wouldn't want to, you know, try to avoid conflict. So I saw
Sure.
some like crazy stuff, and I told my dad he couldn't do much. I was like, all right, you know what? Then I have to really take everything to my own hand and resolve it. You know, even when a teacher bullied me, like I remember, like in my middle school teacher literally just insulted me in front of the whole class. Like she ripped apart my books, called me an idiot, and throw the book right onto my face in front of all the kids. That was humiliation, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, what, 10? I was like, I don't know. I was very, you know, like 13, right? I mean, can you imagine a teacher do that here to the kids?
No.
But that was kind of part of the environment at the time. Teacher had the absolute authority. You know, they just basically bullied the kids. I mean, the teacher came and bullied the kids, right? So the teacher humiliated me in front of everybody. I went home, talked to my dad about that. He didn't do much about it, but that's just his personality.
So, do you
And
feel like having these experiences growing up where you did? In a male-dominated environment
yeah, so
and being in an area that was rougher, right? By
yeah,
most people's
it was kind of, it
standards.
really helped me to be like street smart, right? And to really understand, to help me with the problem solving capability in a real world, like on kind of like a street smart
Yeah.
smartness skills, right? Not just a book smart. Like you really have to be street smart to really, like, you know, and somewhat like get an upper hand, right? In your environment, especially if your parents couldn't really help out, you know, the adults couldn't help out. So
Yeah.
I end up taking it to my own hands and have to solve this issue. So I end up actually you know, just on that issue, I will talk to a lot of kids that have to basically suffer the same from this teacher. And we end up like really rallying everybody and start kind of filing complaint to, you know, through one of my, through one of the kids' parents, you know. One of the examples, right? So that way, you know, here, so when people like make some comment to you, right? Sometimes they're just jabby a little bit, just kind of, you know, they just basically, they see you, they just kind of like, they want to see what kind of, you know, what kind of person you are. They just, they will throw some jab to you a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'm pretty quick at clapping back. And when they realize that, they're like, oh, like I'm not to mess with.
So this makes me feel like this, a huge part of all these things that we always carry our youth into our childhood into our future, right? Mm-hmm. So you have become this very successful entrepreneur in real estate and in finance. And so I'm feeling like all these experiences that you had have made you into that resilient, tough cookie that can deal with whatever comes at you. So as you're building out your businesses, what are some challenges that you noticed and how did you kind of get through them? Or like, what's, give me one example of a big challenge that you have encountered in your finance business.
So in my finance, so basically I would say the one of the biggest challenges basically really, you know, have that kind of like connection with those folks that can really, I would say, like for example, so I start my, you know, after I graduated from UC Berkeley, I, you know, I did investment banking for a little bit and I became a, you know, management consultant, you know, at the top consulting firm. And then after that, you know, I started working for Edward Jones, which kind of launched my financial advisory career. And I noticed that I literally had to do everything from zero, from scratch. I had to go out there and build the practice. I literally knock on a lot of people's door, make phone calls and build my client base. Whereas I see some other folks that just somehow they have some way to get some assets from a retired folks, you know, like a, from like a retired advisor, for example, right? So like those kind of program, they call that some like good night program where like, you know, you can kind of like, they give you like a good transition coming in.
Oh, like you get the book of, what do they call it?
The book of some, you know, some other older folks. I mean, some of like the experienced advisor, even if they're not retired, they might give you some of their books, right? Like just ease you in. I see a lot of people do that, but they don't give me this opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just, maybe I don't know anybody or just basically, maybe I'm just an outlier, right? Yeah. So they just kind of like, I recruit you and see how you can do. And I ended up doing very well. So the first year I was like a rising star. I was basically, so I got a rising star award. I beat out all the folks in my peer that actually recruited at the same time. They got recruited at the same time. So that competitiveness kind of drove me again. So like in 1 month, I don't even know how I did that. I opened like 30 accounts a month. And folks were just like amazed. Like, wow, how do you do that? I didn't even have my assistant. I was just doing it myself. And then,
so I want to dive into that because I think that is one area that so many entrepreneurs struggle with, right? Is going and getting the business.
Right.
And so you didn't have anyone who was
correct
handing you anything.
I was working
out
of my home.
It out.
I didn't even have my office at the time.
So how did you do that? How did you like pick up the phone or go knock on doors? How did you break through and get people to trust you to give you money to invest for them? There has to be trust, right?
Yeah, it is kind of experience. That the first time when I did that, I didn't know if I could do it or not, to be honest. When they tell me, like, you have to knock on people's door, you have to call people, like, they have this kind of list of, like, stuff you need to do, right, as a first year, right? They give you this, like, a 25 phone calls a day, you know, you're going to have to knock on 10 doors and things like that, right? So the first day, I still remember very clearly, I was driving around, I was like, okay, I got to knock on doors. I never done that before. So I knocked on the first door. I remember I was so nervous. I was really nervous. I parked my car, walked to the door, I knock. An old man opened the door because it was a wealthy neighborhood, like a lot of, you know, kind of retired, like elderly, right? Is that right? So old man opened the door. I was like really nervous. I was like stuttering, like I didn't know like what I was saying. So apparently, obviously, I looked very nervous to this person. And he looked at me, he's like, wow, you look very nervous. You want to take a break? calm down a little bit. You want some water? So
wow.
Sometimes you just know. Sometimes you meet some people who's actually, you know, nice enough to do that. It's like, you know, he just see me. Like, he could just tell. Like, maybe it's my first date or something like that. Because I was like, hi, how are you? You know, I was just like script, right? Hey, how are you? Neighborhood. And he's like, you want some water? You want to calm down a bit? You look very nervous. I was like, okay, excuse me. I'm like, I'm sorry. Let me do it all over again. Here's my business card. Yes. I recently just started with the company, but you know, I'm trying the best I can and all that. He's like, yeah. He's like, you know, build up your confidence over. So he just basically, so I was glad I didn't get kicked out. I was glad I didn't get yelled at on my first door. So that was good. I count myself lucky. But on the third door, I got yelled at. You know, I knock on somebody's door and a lady came out. She's like, what are you doing? You just woke up my baby. I'm like, oh, my, you know, sorry. That's like, yeah, 2 p.m. or something like that. It's like, all right, sorry. Man, you know, shut the door on me. I'm like, all right. So, and then that was my first day, right? I was just like, wow. Like, I was like, whoa, like, how long can this last, right? Imagine, because I have to do this every day. Mm-hmm. That's a thing, every day, right? Because I literally start with nothing. Nobody gave me any assets. Nobody hand me anything. So I had to really start from ground zero. So I did a second day. I did a third day. And I started doing it. And I got better and better. And then I got really comfortable. And then I realized, oh, wow, like how people look at you, how people deal with you is how you look at yourself. When I realized, you know, it's like a reflection of like how people deal with you. It's like kind of reflection of how good you are. Right. So when I got better and better, I got so smooth. I talk to people. I can talk to people anywhere, any location, anywhere moment. You know, I became pretty smooth talking with people, and people see me like they can tell, oh, I'm pretty good. So, and then they treat me nicely. And I was like, hey, yeah, because I got good. I got good with what I'm doing. So people can see that they're not stupid, right? People like usually people can, you know, are quick to.
So did you have like a transition where you paid attention to, oh, when I say this, their eyes open up more or they lean in? Like,
no,
was there anything
there's
like
no
that?
Pattern for that. Everybody's different. That's the thing, though. It's a thing. That's why you just have to be very quick. Now, the good thing is I used to play a lot of sports. So you have to be really quick on the spot. So that really helped me. Right. And also the fact that, because, you know, I know a lot about sports, entertainment, all that stuff, it's pretty easy for me to have a conversation with people, which is very important, right? Because at the end, so I realized it's actually just really having a conversation with people. When people feel fun interacting with you, they want to do business with you. So that's kind of what I realized, regardless of your gender, right? Because you're all, at first, whatever you look, I mean, I remember there's another example that was really funny. Once my business started getting very mature, I started getting a lot of calls and a lot of sales calls to my business. So I remember at the time I got a sales call from like a payroll company that tried to get my business. And I still remember that. They were waiting for me at the lobby. So two guys, I walked out. I was like, hey, how are you? One African-American guy, another guy. I was like, I kid you not, he's a midget. I was like, I'm sorry. I'm like, oh, wow, okay. I try to get my business. Let's see what you got. He can hardly hop on my chair. But I was like, you know what? We'll see what happened. So we sit down, they sit down, we start talking. Oh my God, his midget was good. He started talking. He's really good. He was so good that I ended up beginning their business. Cause he really know what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it was like the way he illustrated things and the way the aura. He has.
A good reflection of like you. You said when you first started, no one gave you time of day, right? Or like when your colleagues didn't give you any help, right? Because they may have perceived you a certain way.
Right.
And so,
exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so for this, I think we call them the politically correct term is a small person. The small person, you had a certain idea, like, you know, where's this going? But then he blew you away, right? That he really did know his stuff.
I was amused. I was like, what was going on? Like, I was just like, whoa, this looks funny. Like, what was going on here, right? So
yeah.
Then I realized actually the African American guy was relatively new. So this midget was actually his, you know, his mentor. So he was like some district manager or something like that. So just the minute he starts talking, like his voice, you know, he's kind of, he got the pretty good projected voice and all that. His, you know, his voice, his vibe, but like the way he presents, it's like, wow, it's very impressive. So I end up, but me, myself, I usually, it's hard to sell me stuff, you know, because I'm pretty analytical. Sometimes sure. I don't get so easily, but I was impressed by, you know, the way he presented that. I was like, ooh, that was kind of interesting. So that kind of like taught me, and it's like, in another way, it's like just, you know, if I put myself right on other people's shoes, I was like, oh, okay, I guess what you look like doesn't really matter. It sounds really, you know what you're talking about. Really, you know. Yeah. You know what it, you know, in my clients, whereas one of my clients, she's very funny. When she referred me to somebody, she was like, "Has Wen Jing? She knows her shit."
Yeah, and like,
as long as you know that, that's, I think that's all it matters.
And that's what I feel like with you, Wen Jing. I feel like you have, when you decide on something that you're going to do, you dive in deep. You right. dive in deep and you really get to know it and thoroughly. So anyone from anywhere can come to you, ask you a question, and you're going to be ready.
Yes. Yes. Right. So I was just, you know, fully prepared for that. And then that's kind of what I realized. I was like, wow. So, at first, when you're not good, you're nervous. You're just, you're not experienced. And I think those are all natural progression here. And then once you get better and better and better, and then, yeah, and then after that, I remember, I don't go out door knocking anymore. I wish I could, actually. I wish I still had time to do it. Like,
Why? Tell me why.
Oh, because it's just the way, it's a nice way of, like, it's really a nice way to kind of get back into the energy. Because when you kind of go out there and talk to people, you never know what you get, and just good things can happen. You know, it's just, I want to get that energy. So, I mean, I wish I still have time to go out there just like what I did before. But now I got bogged down by a lot of like business operations in general, right? Because back in the day when I started my career, all I need to worry about is getting sales. You have the company mm-hmm. take care of everything. That's kind of how it goes, right? They take care of the marketing, take care of this, take care of that. I don't need to even worry about anything, not even the website. All I need to worry about is my sales numbers. So I just kind of focus on that and we'll just do what I can to go out there and then just really hustle. And then and over time, you got more and more business, they'll start doing this less and less, less. So now I don't do this anymore because, you know, I get business through referrals and all that kind of, you know, through some other ways. But that really was like, I just feel like, you know, now like my largest, one of my, you know, a lot of my largest clients still from door knocking. And then literally, I remember I met with one of my clients, and now they've been with me for over a decade. So I remember I was at one of my clients' home the other day, and she was still telling me, she's like, oh my God, we knock on a door. You just brought in, you know, like a fresh breath of air. Yeah, thanks for knocking on our door.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah.
So let's say it's a newer entrepreneur, or it's an entrepreneur who is trying to build their business, whatever, it doesn't matter what kind of business it is. What advice do you have for them based on your experience?
What advice? Well,
to get new clients in.
So, I mean, it depends on person's depend on this person's personality. Everybody's personality is different. I have a pretty outgoing personality, and I know what makes me happy. Like when I converse with people, that gives me energy. But that doesn't happen to a lot of other people. So that's why sales is not for everyone. Right. So that's why, you know, Edward Jones, for example, that position, the financial advisor, I think they only every year they only keep like 10%. So 100 people apply. They went through this. A lot of people quit or got fired due to poor performance and only 10% survived. So and I survived and thrived and I was surprised I was that good at it. Before, when I worked for, you know, a management consulting firm or investment banking, I was kind of, you know, I was not like the kind of outstanding kind of person. And then I was like, you know, if you get those kind of performance review, a lot of those was like a meet expectation or something, but not like an exceed expectation. So right. That didn't really make me happy in another way. Cause I'm like a, you know, a big competitive person. I'm like, okay, if I want to do it, I want to do very well. So it looks like this is really not something I can do very well. And I was very surprised to find that I was actually doing very well, you know, on a financial advisory. And I just, you know, like I count myself as blessed. So I guess it just you just have to explore different ways. If sales not for you, then you can do something, you know, maybe supporting the salespeople that are good at it, you know, like supporting somebody who are good at sales. And then maybe you guys split revenue, whatever. You know, there are all different creative way to do it, you know? Like, just
so focus,
what you're good at.
Start with your zone of genius.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And then, I mean, what's so... So let's say that they are, you know, they're outgoing, they're great at connecting. However, it's scary as hell, right? To go and like, especially to knock on a door. What are three tips that you can give on how do you get through that? How do you get through all those like slam doors or people being pissed off at you? What's some advice for you to keep on going and refining and getting better?
I think if you truly believe you're good, like, I mean, like, if you truly believe, right, if you truly believe you're pretty good, you know, what you do, you know, then you should be okay with rejection, right? Because no matter what people say to you, you know you're good. So why would you worry? You only worry when you kind of hesitate, like, oh, am I really good or not, right? Maybe I'm not good. That's why I'm afraid of what people say to me. So I guess, you know, in some way it's like, you know, like if you, I mean, you know, just get before, I mean, I guess just before you start your own company, getting business, maybe just get a sales job and see if you're good with it. You know, a lot of those entrepreneurs, they all start with sales, like McDonald's founder, right? He sold like what, like milkshake. A lot of folks are so like encyclopedias door by door before they, you know, founded all those large companies. A lot of them are salespeople. You can sell anything. Just see if you're good with it. You know, try the sales position like what I did, like financial advisor. It was still somewhat kind of sales. So, and then I tried it and I was really good at it. And also for me, why I tried financial advisory, because my CPA told me I could be good at with it because he filed my tax return and I already invested in real estate for quite a bit. So he kind of like, you know, filed my tax return. He's like, have you thought about being financial advisor? At the time I was a management consultant. I was like, what do you mean my financial advisor? He's like, well, I think you would be pretty good at it. I was like, okay. Okay, sometimes you just never know. Some people might give you some good insights and that you're not aware of. And you're like, oh, let me give financial advisory a try. And then I realized, oh, that's a somewhat kind of sales position. Okay, that's even better because I can really see how I can do it. And then I end up doing well. So that's great. But for other folks, like say, you know, and also I'm good with numbers. So it's just perfect. It just aligned with, you know, my background, my everything. It just comes to me naturally, right? Because my major is economics and like finance. So I'm like, all right, it just comes to me naturally. But you know, if you're not like me with the, you know, the finance background, well, like, I mean, what are you really good at? Like I say, if you like gaming, right? You can probably apply to a gaming company, right? And help them sell their products and see how good you can do. Just, you know, be a
sales. Yeah, it makes me think of... Yeah, it makes me think of like, you know, when people start a business, they can go back and see what was I good at in the past, right? What have I enjoyed? Not just what am I good at, but what did I enjoy?
Exactly.
And how can you put that in? So maybe there's so many things that there's so many great skills that you establish when you get good at gaming, right? Like for you, I think about the competitive nature that you had. It was just kind of natural for you. So how can that apply to what you're building? The focus, the determination, the, you know, setting goals, like all of that. How can you use that to your benefit to grow your business? And that's what I think.
Yeah, and then another thing about setting goals, though, it's very difficult if you just set goals yourself. Like, I would not be where I am if I didn't start working for a company, right? Those companies, they have a very, very, you know, sophisticated progress map for you to do. Like, they get it down to every week. Like, that's one of the things why I joined Edward Jones, because like it probably offers the best training among all the companies out there. Because they really, really, they put you on a training program. Like, from day one, they give you the exact number you need to hit, like every week, like every day, like every month. And they give you like a mentor, and then they put you guys together, maybe like, and they have the systematic way of like a mentorship meeting where like 20 people meet together like every month or every 2 weeks and just really kind of encourage you so you feel like you're not alone. You know, the way they do it was pretty awesome. And I don't know if I could, I just, there's no, if I started all by myself, there's no way I could even, you know, get to that level. Because those goals and stuff like that, it just all come from, you know, all whatever numbers you want to hey, all comes from the what they have experienced. They have like hundreds of years experience. They know exactly what the expectations are. See, that is really, that's important. They know, like, they literally tell you, like, if you overperform this, like, they have this whole number. It's like, oh, you're like mediocre. Oh, you're not doing well. Oh, you're really overperforming. So every week I look at the chart. They literally give you like the chart, like how are you performing, you know, against the peers. And when I did very well, like 1 month, I opened like 30 accounts and had so much revenue. Wow, my performance way like an outlier compared with my peer. Oh my God, I feel so happy. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, kind of one of those things that that really motivate you. Now it's actually a bit more difficult, like for me, like, you know, where I need to go, you know, how do I compare myself with a peer, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's actually, you know, it could put you a little bit in limbo if you're not really kind of, you know, in the, like in the flow, I guess, you know, like just kind of understand like how your peers are doing, all that kind of stuff. You just kind of.
Yeah. And there's a number of things that you have said that make me think that, you know, things that we can extrapolate from what you've talked about. One is systems. Right? Edward Jones, from doing it for 100 years or however they've been around forever, they have created the system that works, right? So in our businesses, how can we recreate that? How can we create that structure? I have a friend of mine who opened up Rolex stores back when Rolex really didn't have people who, it was sort of kind of a franchise model, right? And so this particular gentleman and his business partner, they opened up these Rolex stores and they created that structure, like what you're talking about. And they ended up with the best results in their particular locations. And Rolex wanted to, you know, I think they did. I think they actually copied their system. So how can you do that in your own business, right? And just keep on refining and improving and testing and watching data.
It's easier said than done. Like, I'm still doing it. Like, I'm still, it's like I utilize different apps, right, to document the system, the process and procedures, and I hire my assistant to do it. And I'm doing the best I can, but it's a little, I don't know. It's just like, I know the theory. I even read the book, like the E-Myth book, right? Mm-hmm. You probably heard of it.
Book,
and, you know, how to make the business work for you. You know, how do you not make the business as yourself, right? You want to work on the business. Is that supposed to be in the business? Yada, yada, yada. So all that kind of stuff. So one time I was speaking with the CFO of a huge wealth management firm. He actually, at the time I was talking about, he was talking about how he was going to join me kind of to start some kind of partnership and things like that. So he gave me some kind of insights, very interesting. So he's like, well, I'm a CFO, right? So a lot of times we have to work on the business, as you can say, like not actually in the business, right? Because I mean, that's a huge firm. It's like he's mm-hmm. doing with it. And it had like, I don't know, 50 people and 100 people underneath. And so he was just like, wow, you know, as a leadership team, you know, we're going to have to work on the business, right? So we have to really think about a vision, like 3 months and a year and 2-5 years ahead. But at the same time, you can't forget about our daily operation. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of, he's like, he used this analogy. It's like, he's like your daily living, right? Like you can plan all that things five, you know, a year ahead or something, buying a house or this and that and that. But at the same time, you still need to eat. You can't just put all the time and energy on buying a house and forget about eating and you just starve to death. So you really have to understand that, right? You got to have to keep up with the daily eating, right? To manage your daily life. At the same time, keep up with whatever you want to do. You have to think about what you need to do 1 year, 5 years down the road. So that's like a little bit kind of hard things to balance. So like, what he said resonated with what I've been thinking. Just, oh man, it's not easy.
It's not easy. You have to, you know, as the owner, you have to juggle a number of different hats, right? And we just keep on trying to get better. But one thing that I talk about with my clients all the time is how can you simplify? How can you delegate? And how can you pay attention, right? To the bigger picture, but just always knowing where are you going with the business? Where are you going and how are you staying focused on that? And that's, you know, that's what it comes down to. So Wenjing, we could go on and on, but I know you need to get on with your day, but tell us, where can we find out more information about your businesses, especially about your financial advisory firm?
Yes. So we have a lot of social media. So social media sites. And we have a, you know, main website, winadvisory.com. So I actually, as I told you last time, that we're upgrading this website. So soon you will see the brand new website. And we actually were on the very final stage, like we're 99.5% done. So, and then, so our website is winadvisory.com. And full name, Wayne Capital Advisory. So it's easily searchable on Google as well. If you're typing Wayne Capital Advisory, it will just, you know, I will pop my website, all the information about my company pop up. And then you will see my website, and then you will see all the social media sites that we have information on. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and LinkedIn, we're on the, and then the, we're on the, actually, you know, we're on Instagram, and we're on YouTube, and then there's another one.
TikTok?
Not TikTok. That's just... that's not our target okay. audience. Yeah, that's not our target audience. But we're on a lot, all those major social media. So
all right,
well, we have a lot of contents there.
If you are looking for someone to help you with your finances and to help you really create financial freedom, I strongly suggest you go check out Wenjing's site. And you can find it in our comments below or on our landing page is her link. But go check her out because she is the real deal. And
thank you.
I don't say that lightly. So especially when it comes to our finances. But go check her out. And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be here with us and share your wisdom and help us grow ours.
Yeah, no problem. Well, thanks for the invitation. It's always fun speaking with you. And, you know, you're a great host, and I'll definitely look forward to working with each other.
All right.
In some way.
In some way we will. Thank you so much.
Yes. Okay. All right. I will talk to you later.